This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock. Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. This is episode 400, man.
400, man.
400 episodes.
400.
Think about the number of hours you have put up with my shit. just pause and think about that for a second. I did that, you know, you think like it's an hour and a half edited.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
per episode, give or take.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It's about 4 to 5 hours of hanging out.
Yeah. Right.
To record a show. Record a lot of it's
at least
bullshitting.
4 to 5
right?
hours.
4 to 5 hours.
Yeah, I have to put up with you for a lot longer than just
times 400 hours. That is 1,600 hours of my shit you have been eating.
But I've known you for 20 years. It's a lot more than that.
It's true. It's true. And to join in the eating of my shit, we've invited a friend.
Wait a minute.
What? That is how you introduce guests.
Is that how you do it now?
That's how we do this now.
Okay.
No?
All right.
We have live in studio.
In the glory hole.
In the glory hole. Is this your first trip to the glory hole? Don't lie to me, Seth.
I have a feeling this is going to be taken way out of context. Since
you're never going to be able to run for office.
And he was talking about, you know, eating your shit all night. I'm like, this was not on the literature you sent me.
That is true. Yeah.
Seth Andrews from the Thinking Atheist podcast, live here in studio. We're very excited to have you join us for episode 400.
It's an honor. I'm a fan. You guys have been on my show a few times, and it's... You know, it's funny when you're a podcaster, especially in the year 2018, you're kind of in many ways a needle in a stack of needles, right? Back when we first started podcasting, right? I mean, you're like, oh yeah, there's a few podcasts, and now it's like there's an ocean.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah,
absolutely.
And yet you guys stand out, and you know, you guys are always making waves. People always tell me how much they love your stuff
or hate us, Well, that's another
thing. Good either way.
Good.
Honestly, I got a question about this since I'm sitting here with you guys. But I mean, with the name Cognitive Dissonance, which is its own in joke, like I was wondering how often do you have to explain the name of the show? And then I thought to myself, well, somebody who's listening to Cognitive who ends up here, they probably are already ready far enough along in the game.
Oh yeah.
They already know, and you don't have to explain it. Right.
And we don't explain it. You know, like we've always joked that this is a preaching to the choir show. Like that, you know, your show, I think starts off for a lot of people as like a really good introduction to this set of ideas.
It's a bridge.
Right. Yeah. It's a great soft place to land. We are not a soft place to land. Like we never pretended that we are. We're not trying to be, you know, it's like you're mad, you're annoyed, you think all this stuff is nonsense. It really gets your goat. Like, hey, come over here. Come on over here.
This is off some steam.
This is
gotcha.
This is where the adolescents are cursing at each other. This is where it is. That's
pretty much it too.
But you know, I gotta tell you a story and a very brief one and offer you a thank you too. Because I am getting married in April to a woman named Haley. And I actually would not know Haley if it was not for your show. So Haley found your show when she first started kind of poking her head into the podcast world and into the atheist community. She found your show. Very quickly after she found your show, we were on your show. She became involved in the community. I met her through the community. The only reason she and I know each other, the only reason she's in community at all is because of your show.
Divine destiny right there, baby.
It's pretty fun.
I'm the Chuck Woolery of now, for those under the age of 35, Chuck Woolery was host of Love Connection. Yeah. And I'm at the age when I have to do that, right?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I had this on record. A record was a vinyl disc.
That you held up to the sun.
Right?
And you looked through. Yeah.
It's just funny because when she and I first got to talk, she's like, I've been listening to your show for, you know, She listened to all of our shows. She listened to the whole back home. Well, how'd you find us? Well, Seth Andrews from The Thinking Atheist. Awesome.
That's fantastic. So, I love stories like that.
So we are connected in that way, and you didn't know it.
My
so
wife and I were married for 17 years, and you introduced us.
You know what's really weird? I was just asked recently to be the officiant at a secular wedding in October in California.
Oh, cool.
And I've never done it. And I always thought, well, that'd be kind of cool, but they don't want a priest, right? They don't want any woo.
Yeah.
Even though at least one side of the family is pretty religious. They said, you know, we both listen to your show and we think you've got a real heart for people and you're a good storyteller. And we just feel like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if Seth? So now I'm like, well, what does this entail? So I'm going through all the California literature to find out, you know, what's the legal requirement to be a secular officiant. But it looks like in October I'll be the preacher at a wedding.
That's funny. Awesome. Yeah.
So I'm excited. It's a real honor to be asked. It's amazing, you know, how this community kind of connects people. It's like people that that in any other circumstance you would never have known. You'd never have known their name or seen their face. And yet all of a sudden we see the network happen and then you have that and you can carry it forward. It's awesome.
So. Yeah. Do you have a lot of people that when they listen to your show that they are religious and they still listen just because they want to hear like an alternative argument?
You know, I don't hear a lot from people who say I'm religious and I enjoy listening. I hear a few people who listen and they send me that sort of amused email that's like, you know, I listen along. You're wrong on an awful lot of points.
You're adorably wrong.
Yeah, it's very much that. I had one guy back when I first started and he sent me just a heated and indignant message about all the things I was wrong about. And weird, like 4 years later, he sent me another email and I remembered it. I remember the guy and he said, you know, I have to tell you that I was wrong about all the stuff that I had been protesting back then. I actually went and did some homework and I'm an atheist now.
And that so Matt Dillahunty.
And now you know the rest.
So, I mean, it makes for a good story. But, you know, I do. My show is like the show that pops up on a Google search when a person who is going through the journey of doubt says, what the hell's an atheist? And they type it in and the show pops up. And then they can start in the shallower waters or in waters that don't attack their particular religion. So if you're a Christian, they love making fun of Scientology, right? Or if they're a Mormon, they can listen to the show about Jehovah's Witnesses. Or if they don't want to listen to a show about religion, we'll do ghost stories every October. I mean, they can wade into the water. And before you know it, they're back for more. They're back for more. And you never know. You know,
first one's free. That's the angle that you're going at, right? I gotcha. So,
yeah. It's like it's always been the little women that caught the vision of giving, beginning with Jesus himself, out of their private means. Some of you little precious ones have that little grocery money, some of that little money set aside. Assure tonight the blessings of God on your family by giving it to God and speaking that. Say it, God, this is for blessings on my family.
This is a story from New York Daily News. Televangelist Kenneth Copeland thanks followers and Jesus.
Hey, Jesus too.
Jesus was not an insubstantial contributor. Yeah,
Jesus co-signed on the loan.
He gave all 30 pieces of his silver.
He co-signed. The thing is that, you know, Jesus will take away that jet if he doesn't get a 3.5 GPA. That's the key. You know, you can't even use it on the weekends. He can only go back to school. That's it. Back and forth to school.
Right. So Kenneth Copeland got a private jet and he may be one of the richest pastors in the world. And his, you know, the thing is like, I do like the way that he responded to getting this private jet, which was to pose braggadociously in front of the private jet with his fucking, he's just like, yeah, that's my private jet. I bet you bitches don't have a private jet.
And who has a mission accomplished banner after Bush?
Same thing.
Fucking does same, that.
He's got a mission accomplished. It's like, did you miss that?
You missed that entire bit of...
Because we're still trying to accomplish that mission. Yeah. It's been 17 years.
ISIS might do it. I don't know. We'll see.
The prosperity gospel preachers have always blown my mind, right? Because I'm always thinking, well, they're doing the name it and claim it. And they're quoting whatever prosperity verse, you know, the popular ones that talk about bring your tithe into the storehouse, which which is different than offerings. And they get into blessings and cast your bread upon the water and all these. They just, they're.
What does that get ducks if you do that?
And in the afterlife, you're going to get a prize.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then, and by the way, this is not his first jet. He's got five.
Well, okay. All right.
He's got five planes.
Hang on, Seth. That sounds bad. But the first four are for practice. Yeah.
That's the first four. Yeah.
And this one's probably faster than the other ones that he has.
They're designated. One's an international travel jet, and they've all got their kind of thing. He's got his own airstrip.
I mean, what do you have? One pair of shoes? You know, come the fuck on. It's just, you got to go matchy-matchy.
Here
jet
we are.
Suit, right?
Picking on Copeland.
Now, well, remember, who was that guy? Creflo Dollar?
Yeah.
Did Creflo Dollar
want a jet or a helicopter jet or something?
It was like a $50 million jet.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how this is God's will, and he was making all kind of promises. Again, God's going to bless you one day down the way in this sort of nebulous time period, or maybe even after you die. You know, what's interesting about Copeland when I was doing the research on his story is that it ain't over, because now he's asking his minion, so to speak, to help him build a hangar.
I gotta have a house for my jet. My jet can't be. What do you want me to have? A homeless jet?
I can't like put it in a pole barn. What the fuck?
I'm not gonna hand wipe this thing down every time I take it off.
I love the prosperity gospel stuff too, because like you said, it's a prize later. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of like, but I already have the prize now. That's my money. Like,
even when I was a devout Christian, I remember looking at these guys going, Jesus used to get around on the back of an ass. Yeah. Okay. So you don't need back Oral Roberts back when he had wrecked his Mercedes, and you know, they were talking about all the lavish stuff.
Sure.
His son, when he was president of Oral Roberts University, I think someone who had worked at the university or worked for him said he had at one point 250 neckties. That's how big his closets were. And I think, you know, the prosperity gospel seems awfully front loaded.
Yeah.
Right.
In favor of these guys. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're going to wait for your prize, but I'm like a fucking shitty toddler. I want my prize right now.
What's interesting is I used to be a Christian too. And I remember hearing about these guys. And I remember thinking to myself, these guys were liars. Like, even when I was a Christian, I was just like, no, these guys can't be telling the truth. But there is a large section of people in the world that think they're telling the truth that they need to get. I mean, look at fucking Joel Osteen makes a shit ton of money.
Yep.
Every week, that guy, he's
okay,
raking
all right,
it
yeah,
up.
But he's got to pay for the teeth whitening. And
he's
that's
got
not
giant
that's chiclets,
that guy, doesn't he?
The cost of those things has to be incredible. Maintenance.
He's like,
you got to power wash and sandblast those things, the whole team involved.
This human costume is so uncomfortable.
it's like the, what was that movie? Men in Black.
Yeah, where the cockroaches
like,
in him
like driving inside of him, and it's just all jerky and weird.
He's twitchy and weird. Yeah, it's funny that there's just such a large group, because I did not believe it. I did not believe them when I was.
Well, you know, it's very insidious. I mean, we're laughing about it, but in the church, and I've been to these churches, my father was more conservative. My mother was Pentecostal. So I got the mix. I got the Baptist a little bit. Yeah. And so they go, and you see people who. The idea is that it all belongs to God anyway. This is why they say you don't give your money to God. You bring to God what is already his. Everything belongs to the Lord. The Lord.
Well, why do I have to bring it? It's already his. It's just as his in my pocket.
In the Bible, it says he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, right? So your obedience, it's an act of obedience to bring back to God what was already his. You're just borrowing it for the time.
Yeah.
And so you got people who are bringing their Social Security checks, the money they'd spend on medication or rent or something else, or maybe they got hospital bills. And it's a faith exercise. It's essentially preying on people's desperate need to find hope. And in that way, I find it's truly insidious. It's a prey on the vulnerable.
I was going to ask, are most of the people contributing because they're desperate? Like, it's not the middle class are not contributing, right? This is, and the upper class are certainly not contributing to this.
Well, I mean, you never know. Some millionaires, there was a millionaire who came in for Oral Roberts when he was building the City of Faith and gave him like the final million. So you'll find those people from time to time.
But by and large, do you think it's more people who are more destitute and more vulnerable? In terms of just number, not dollars, because dollars don't matter, but I'm talking about like the total number of like contributors. Do you think it's, I don't know, you don't know for sure, but is that your impression?
I don't,
your experience?
You know, I think people are so diverse, they give for a diverse number of reasons, but I think there's a desire for hope. Sometimes there's desperation. Maybe somebody genuinely is financially destitute and they're waiting because they tell these stories in church. You know, I had $1,000 deficit and I had no money and they're going to throw me out. And I prayed and I believed and I gived beyond my means. And 2 days later in the mailbox, I got an inheritance check that I didn't
from a relative. I love that God had to kill somebody for it. Like, God had to fucking murder somebody. They like, well, Jim stuff. Needs some money, so Sally, you gotta go.
Somebody pull a plug down there. Yeah.
And they, it's like and that, they do this.
Twilight Zone episode with a box. You know, like you press the button and somebody dies. I don't know.
Show the little kid you know, makes everybody dead.
Bring those, be prayed those people out, and you know, you get the sensory stuff going with the music and everything else. And, and the heat of the moment, they hit the ATM machines. There are some churches that have ATM machines in the lobbies of their buildings.
Wow. What?
Yeah. And so they get everybody all worked up. They go out and they just pull out the cash.
So here's what you do. You get one of those cash machines and then you do the $5 upcharge on it. So they don't have to, so they want to leave. So you make it like one of those destination ones. Whenever you go to like the Great America or whatever, or like some sort of theme park and you're like, $7 just to get my money? It's my money.
It's like $7. And then they say like, also the bank's going to charge you $3. Like, bank, you're like, fuck it, I want 10, it costs me 10.
Already raw. What are you going to do to me?
In the name of Jesus, we speak that.
All right, this story is from SciPost.org. I love this story. This is a fake God helmet can elicit extraordinary experiences, especially among spiritual people. I just wonder, like, does it come with a fake God spear for the spear and magic helmet?
Spear and magic.
I wasn't tracking. Thanks for the filling.
I had to explain. The best jokes are when they're when you have to explain them.
Go out of your way to explain them.
That's how you know you hit
absolutely.
Right off the bat, though, it's this bogus. It's this. This does not work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So a little background. So, and I think this is hilarious. And it's funny because, see, so you mentioned earlier today that Noah couldn't make hay out of this for a citation needed.
Right.
He's going to talk about this as one of the subjects on the Citation Needed show. Wasn't able to make fun of it. I can't understand how that's even possible.
Yeah.
This is a helmet that's basically just a bunch of blinky lights and LEDs and it's fucking toggle switches.
It's a skater helmet painted like silver or something.
It looks like the wires and shit that come out of the fucking telepaths from Minority Report. Yeah. It looks so obviously fake. Like if somebody comes up to you and it's like, I've got a brain reading device. You're like, get the fuck out of here with
absolutely,
that thing.
Absolutely.
So, and I love what they're trying to test. So what they're trying to test is whether or not drunk people will be more susceptible to these experiences.
Right.
So they go to a big fucking music festival and figure they'll just be able to find a bunch of drunk people. And I had a laugh because it's like, yeah, well, depending on the music festival,
for sure,
you'll definitely find more people that are going to be open to fucking quasi spiritual experiences, right? Like, if you go to like a Christian rock festival, you're going to get a different result than if you go to like Coachella, right?
Or Burning Man.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So these guys go out and they've got this like fucking fake helmet, which is just fucking adorable.
Which looks ridiculous.
It's amazing.
It looks ridiculous.
It's amazing.
I didn't see a picture of the helmet. Is it like the teacher in the old Star Trek episode? Oh, okay. All right.
Go to this article, people. You'll see it.
All right. I'm seeing.
So great. And they want to see like, you know, will people report bullshit basically more frequently if they're inebriated? But the best part is that people do report this bullshit.
Yeah.
Now to be entirely fair, they kind of do some sensory deprivation shit. That's a part of this experiment. So they don't just put a helmet on and say, what do you feel? They also like put the helmet on and then they have like a soothing kind of noise.
Using their visor or something.
Yeah.
Too?
And they kind of block. So they do some sensory deprivation pieces as well. And I think, you know, there is some relevance to that components. I think when you put all that shit on people, their mind starts to wander, you know, and you sort of just get so, but they report having extraordinary spiritual experiences. I would love to be tested.
Yeah.
I think it'd be fun. If you didn't know that it was bullshit, you know, would you drift off? And because I thought about it, because I've done sensory deprivation, right? Mm-hmm. So I've done sensory deprivation 5 or 6 times.
Sure.
And I have never hallucinated from it, but you don't, you know, what I have found is that the differentiation between sleeping, being asleep and being awake becomes very difficult to tell apart. You'll jolt a little bit like you had just woken up, but you're not necessarily aware that you had just fallen asleep. And so that boundary kind of becomes more erosive, mm-hmm. or at least that's been my experience.
I don't know. I mean, I'm reading the article and I'm like weird sensations, involuntary movements, hallucinating on heavy drinkers. The helmet seems redundant, right? The helmet. Well, my thought about the experiment is, honestly, it's not unlike church.
Sure.
Because instead of using the helmet as kind of a totem or a conduit for spiritual energy, churches do this stuff all the time. You know, come here and here's the prayer cloth. A lot of the Pentecostal churches I grew up going to, they used actual anointing oil, which is usually just freaking olive oil, and they'd have it up there and they'd put olive oil on your head as they prayed for you. It was like
now I'm going to break out.
This specific physical thing will enhance the spiritual. But how do they jive all this with the people who say that God can't be measured scientifically? So here's an object or an instrument that quote unquote is going to test God scientifically, but God cannot be measured. How do you jive the two different narratives for God? That's my question.
It would seem like they would experience some level of cognitive dissonance. Yes. That's the look Cecil gives me when he's really impressed by what I've said.
I am very impressed right now. You know, what's interesting about this entire thing is that, you know, these people go and they have these with a placebo, a clear placebo.
Absolutely.
They go out and they have these experiences. And I feel like this can sometimes, you know, sometimes people will have, and I don't know, Seth, if you ever had any of these, but some people can have, if they're faithful, some very foundational experience that reinforces their faith. Something like, you know, my mom came to visit me when she was dying. I saw her spirit, or, you know, I saw an angel when I flipped over in that car, or when I, you know, just woke up in the morning, I saw this one thing and I knew, you know what I mean? Like there's a moment where they feel like there's a demon in the room and then they pray and the demon goes away. Many people have these experiences that they look to and say, you know, I don't know that I was super faithful before, but now after that experience, I'm very, very faithful.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever had any of those experiences. I know I never had any of those experiences. Never once in my life had a foundational experience that made it so I was faithful. But if this is a placebo and there's nothing to it and people are still having these things, it makes it so much easier to explain those experiences.
Right.
As, like you said, transitional between sleep and awake. Or, you know, there's so many people out there that have, what do you call it when you're the sleep paralysis.
Right.
People will have sleep paralysis. Yeah. I've had sleep paralysis once too.
I've never had it. I'm really grateful.
It happens to me a few times a year.
Yeah. And it's really, really disturbing. It's very disturbing.
If I was a believer, I would think it was a spiritual attack. Because there's a figure in the dream. Your body's paralyzed. Do you know what you guys know?
I've had it.
And so for those who may not be familiar with it, but it's like the body is paralyzed for dream sleep, meaning that if you dream you're running the marathon, you don't want your body flopping around the bed. So the brain paralyzes the body. But in reality, what happens is while your body's paralyzed, you're actually drifting toward consciousness, meaning you can almost, sometimes you can even see and open your eyes and see inside the bedroom, but your body remains paralyzed. And so you panic. On top of that, you have perception of a looming figure in the room, which is a common thing about this. And it's happened to me. You wake up, you can't move, and there's a dark figure looming over your bed.
Yeah.
And then you freak out even more and you lose your mind.
I've never had the dark figure, but I have had the feeling of something weighing on me, like pressing on me, like holding me in a place and not being able to move. And
were
it's
you
really
a believer
just,
though at the
I'm,
time?
No, I was not a believer. And so I immediately recognized it as sleep paralysis. I was calm for 2 or 3 minutes and I waited for it to go away.
Yeah.
I knew what it was, but it scared me. I mean, it's a scary situation. It's a scary feeling. Your heart races and you get a little anxiety. And
does it speak to the conditioning that we have? I mean, people who are more, I don't know how to say this, but like certain churches attract certain kind of people. And the more sort of flighty, emotion-driven, the ones who are more prone to tears and hands in the air and they're more physically expressive, those types of people normally tend to gravitate toward these speaking in tongues, sort of acting out, pew jumping kind of deals. And they're also, in my experience, and I'm not a scientist, but there are also many of the types of people who will say that they're, when they drift out of fundamentalism, they're the ones who say, well, I'm spiritual, I'm acting in a spiritual way. Well, if this is kind of how I'm wired, and somebody comes up and sticks a helmet on me, I mean, don't you think, is that just a reflex, right?
That's true.
I just go there?
It might be, right? It might be that that's the thing that they're, you know, that they're already conditioned to go in that space. We've talked about this recently about schizophrenia. And so sometimes people will have schizophrenic episodes and they'll see a demon or an angel, and then they'll commit some horrific act based on what the demon or the angel says. And Tom and I were wondering aloud, what happens if somebody doesn't have that structure of demon or angel and they're schizophrenic? What happens to them in that situation?
Now, what does the mind conjure?
We had a couple people send in messages, and one of them said, you know, if you don't have that as a background, they might think there's aliens. They might think there's some, they will figure out something.
Yeah.
And that thing will do the thing that the angel or the demon would do in that situation.
Did you guys ever follow the work of that? I think he's a neuroscientist in Ontario. Michael Persinger, who had the God helmet with the magnets years and years ago.
No.
Well, he did a study. Now, the studies come under some pretty fierce criticism. I was guilty years ago of kind of saying, oh, yeah, they've been able to replicate the God effect using helmets. And it turns out that a lot of the data, quote unquote data, coming out of Persinger's office has not been peer reviewed and certainly hasn't been replicated. But he had what looked like a motorcycle helmet, and he had it wired with magnets, and they would take people in this sensory chamber, and using electromagnets, he said he was able to, and a significant percentage of people introduced the feeling that there was a God in the room or a spirit or an angel.
Like through his thought of stimulating parts of the brain?
Yeah, I mean, using this specific kind of magnetism. And I think Dawkins even submitted himself to it. He's like, hey, put the helmet on me. He didn't feel anything. And then some other scientists elsewhere, I don't remember exactly where, I'd have to look it up, but they went and they replicated his conditions, and they said none of our people said they found anything. But it's obviously, it's something that's interesting. What external stimuli could make the brain... You know, it's like the people who are on their deathbed or who have experienced a near-death experience. I had one guy call the radio show, and he's like, you know, I went down the tunnel and I saw my grandma and I saw this, but I realized it's not God, it's hypoxia, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He knew what it was.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But it's funny that you said Dawkins did that. That props to give up your, you know, how he makes money is his nugget. And to put a helmet on that could maybe fuck, that's like fucking Ron Jeremy giving up his cock. You know what I mean? Like, are you kidding me? I wouldn't do.
I don't even know what I'd have to give up. Be like, I don't know, the whole thing.
I made it garbage.
You can have the whole thing.
You can have the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to present that point to him when I see him in the lecture circuit.
I said, who's that guy on the other side of the glory hole? It's Jesus.
This story is from Politico.com. This is Tony Perkins. I just love the way he's phrased. Trump gets a mulligan on life and Stormy Daniels. So a little background, the Stormy Daniels story. Stormy Daniels is a porn star. She said that back in, I think, 2006.
Yeah.
She had an affair with Donald Trump and was paid $130,000 in hush money, which is the biggest waste of money. The man has wasted a lot of money.
Yeah.
But giving money to a porn star to keep her mouth shut.
Yeah. And then she doesn't.
And that, yeah. Right. It's like, have you ever watched porn? Keeping her mouth shut is exactly what she's paid not to do. Are you kidding me?
Depends on the scene.
All right. Fair enough.
I guess that's fair. You know, I want to sidestep this just for a second though, with the Stormy Daniels thing. And this has been happening lately a lot. People will post something on Facebook or somewhere else, and they'll presume it's true, and they don't even bother to take a look on Snopes or whatever.
Right.
And there's a lot of satire that is masquerading as a news story.
Right.
This Stormy Daniels one had one where Jim Baker supposedly said that he was Jim Baker. This was satire, but somebody had written an article, a satirical article about Jim Baker sharing the gospel, that Donald Trump was trying to share the gospel with Stormy Daniels, which is a funny idea.
It's a great funny satire.
It's a funny satire, but it's just not true, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there was another one that I found today that was somebody posted, and I started laughing when I read it, and then I checked and it wasn't real. And I wish it was real, but it's not real. And I want to read it. It made me laugh. It made me laugh out loud when I saw it. So let me open it up real quick. I just want to read. This is supposedly from her testimony. What they did was they snapshotted her testimony and then they erased part of it and put in this little piece, right?
Okay.
I'm going to read this piece. We ended up having dinner in the room. I'll never forget his order. He calls up room service and goes, I want a pizza and I want little toppings on the pizza to littler pizzas, like the size of pepperonis, but they're actually full pizzas, just little. So then he hangs up the phone and I assume he's going to make his move on me, but he gets up and in this really sing-songy voice, he starts going, I'm having pizzas, little pizzas on top, I'm having little pizzas on top. And then he goes, I'm going to give you the night of your life. I'm going to fuck you so hard in your pussy. It's going to feel like I just ate pizza with tiny pizzas as the topping. I read that and I thought, that's the greatest thing ever written, right? Like people say the Bible's really great or whatever. It's like the greatest story ever told. That is the greatest story ever told.
That's a masterpiece.
That's the greatest story ever
Put
told.
Put your pens down.
Yeah, it's just, over. You're done. There's no more literature. Quit. Just quit. You're done. But when I
also, I want one of those pizzas.
I do too.
I just said, I actually want one of those pizzas.
We just ate a pizza. I would eat another pizza if it had little pizzas on it.
Well, sir, what would you like on your pizzas?
Redundancy.
What I want is an infinity mirror of pizzas. But yeah.
You open the box, just sucks everything in. It's a vortex pizza. Oh my God. But it'll kill us all.
It's funny because like we are now, we're falling for it. Like there's a lot of fake news and whatnot going around, but we're falling for it because we want, because first off, it's so easy to believe. You hear that about Trump and you immediately think, yeah, he'd do that.
Like,
he'd do that. Yeah, there's no problem.
Right.
And one of the things that happens, especially in this article, is kind of almost the same thing. They're like, they hear the story and they don't deny that he fucked the girl. They don't deny that he paid her the money. They're just like, yeah, but
it's fine.
But it's okay.
Right.
Whatever. You know, he's better now.
I love this quote by Perkins in the article. He's talking about, you know, turning the other cheek or whatever. This is a quote that I'd picked up. Quote, you know, you only have two cheeks, which I was thinking, that's a great line for a Stormy Daniels porn video. Right.
She's in like a whole series of them. You only have two cheeks. One, you only have two cheeks. Two. Yeah.
Well, Perkins always freaks me out. I mean, he's always been the enemy of LGBT rights. And he's always got this sort of creepy, you know, dominionist attitude about policy. He tramples over the church state line at every turn. The guy just makes me crazy. And then you got Franklin Graham, right? I mean, in my family, Billy Graham is almost Jesus.
Wow.
I mean, Billy Graham is one of those guys where he is almost above reproach. You don't criticize him. He's helped to win how many millions of souls, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
With all of these major crusades. And now you got his son, Franklin, who's kind of running the show. And to watch Franklin either, I can't decide, are you selling out your values or are these secretly actually your values? To watch him run around and excuse Donald Trump in this way, look the other way. I'm like, if Obama had pulled half the shit, you would lose your mind. Oh,
absolutely.
But if Obama was even remotely analogous to Trump, he never could have gotten elected as a black guy, right? Like if he was a black guy that had three wives and, you know, five kids or whatever and all the rest. I mean, there's no way. There's no fucking way. The standard is nowhere near. Obama had to be perfect or nearly perfect in every way. He could never misspeak. He could never flub.
Yeah.
You know, he had to be above reproach at every single moment. What kills me about this shit is like, this feels to me like we talked about before. This feels to me like the sin and forgiveness problem. You know, Christianity has this built-in mechanism where it doesn't make any difference if you're a good person or not. You can just, he says, like, we get, like, I'm gonna go to the quote because it's relevant. He says, we kind of gave him, all right, you get a mulligan, you get a do-over here. And it's like, yeah, you know, you get infinite do-overs. You get infinite mulligans on being a decent fucking person with Christianity.
Or they say, well, you know, God often uses awful people to bring his will about. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got an out for everything. I did a video, I produced a video I think it was before the election. And it was called Christians for Donald Trump. And we took the best verses of the Christian Bible. We skipped all the other stuff about rape and incest and all that.
Sure.
And we found, you know, like, don't be proud, you know, don't be prideful, but be ye humble. And then we grabbed the most egotistical man on the planet, Donald Trump, and a soundbite. Don't lust. Well, that was an easy one. There's soundbites right. everywhere of the guy lusting.
Yeah, sure. After his own daughter.
Don't seek vengeance, right? Turn the other cheek. And then you see him talking to a crowd of cheering people saying, get even, get revenge, go after the people who get you. He is the antithesis of the best teachings of Jesus. Sure. And yet I'm surrounded in Oklahoma by people who are evangelical, overt Bible fundamentalists who think he is the guy. I sent my own father the direct quote of grab him by the pussy with Donald Trump, right? Because he was busy talking about how Trump's God's instrument. And it's like he didn't see it.
He can't see it. He's got a vested interest in not seeing it.
Just walked right on by and continued as if it did not exist. And it kind of creeped me out.
You know what's interesting is the shithole comment that he made recently that they said, you know, first we reported on it the night it happened, right? So we record on Thursdays. It happened on a Thursday. We saw it happen. It happened. Tom was probably listening to NPR on the way in, and they immediately were talking about it. I was listening to NPR over here. I heard them talk about it. I came in. I started reading stories about it. The first thing we talk about on our show is this. We also checked to see what the White House had said at that point. And at that point, they hadn't even denied it. They were just like, yeah, that's pretty much what he said.
Yeah. They said, Trump uses some harsh language.
Trump uses some harsh language.
He stands behind the language he uses.
Exactly. And so then the next day, a couple of senators come out, Republicans and Democrats, and they say, yeah, that's what he said. And then Trump changes his tune. And he says, no, I didn't say it. I didn't say that at all. But, you know, we all know that, you know, even if it wasn't what he said, it's the manner in which he said it, right? Those shithole countries, he doesn't think those people are people. And it's a disgusting, shitty thought that came from his mouth. And I thought to myself after hearing that, and Tom and I were talking about, we're like, who the fuck could possibly be the guy who's like, yeah. And the next day I saw a Facebook video of this, like, she's like a mom or something. So somebody from some, I don't even know, like probably from Mississippi or something. And she's just beaming ear to ear. I can't believe all these Democrats got their underwear in a bunch over this.
All those snowflakes.
This is exactly what people need to hear. This is what we all been thinking for so long.
He's not afraid to speak his mind.
Exactly.
Right?
They are our shithole countries and these are shithole people. And, you know, good for Trump. And I'm so glad that he said that. Oh, I just love it. I just love it. Thanks, peeps. And then she hangs up and I'm just like, holy shit.
Yeah, she admires him.
Holy shit.
Yeah, now I can be a bigot out loud. Yeah. That's all that means is now. Well, God, it was just so awkward to be like the only bigot in the room, or at least the only bigot that, you know, I can't tell if you're a bigot because you can't say you're a bigot. Shit.
How much of it is it just, whew, we're in power, right? I mean, yeah, he's an asshole, but he's our asshole, right? At least we're on the majority side.
Yeah, but I don't even think it's that, because I think it's like, we're assholes too. I don't think it's even like, oh, he's an asshole, but it's like, oh my God. Finally, as an asshole, I feel validated in my assholery.
Sure.
Both of my cheeks have been validated. Yeah.
Validate those cheeks so hard they're black and blue.
Contrary to popular opinion, God is not against sex. It was his idea in the first place.
All right, I love this. This is also Trump. This is from the Raw story. He's not president perfect. Who would have thought? Watch evangelist, Franklin Graham blow off Trump affair. Yeah, blow him off.
Hey, now.
With adult star Stormy Daniels. All right. So this is Graham. I'm just going to quote a few things and we can chit chat a little bit about it. First of all, Graham says, Witt, the guy who's interviewing him, says, you know, hey, you know, you've heard about this event with Stormy Daniels. You know, what do you think of it? Doesn't that challenge your faith in the president as well? I don't want to talk about the idea of having faith in a president. It says, does the president have a sin problem? And Graham says, well, I can promise you he's not president perfect.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, but like, I mean, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but the interviewer is like, yeah, but I mean, doesn't that seem hypocritical? And he says, well, first of all, I don't think Trump's admitted to having this affair with this person. So this is just a news story. I don't know if it's accurate. He says, now, did he have an affair with this woman? I have no clue. But I believe that 70 years of age, the president is a much different person today than he was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or whatever. And we just have to give the man the benefit of the doubt. If he said he didn't do it, let's just say he didn't do it.
And that's what a lot of these people are saying, is that the reason why they went after Clinton is because he did it in office. That's why we went after Clinton. Not that. And they're like, and they don't care about this because they're like, oh, it happened before. It's not a big deal. It's not an issue.
And the thing is, like, I don't care either.
I don't either.
You know, but what I care about is the what baffles me, I guess. You know, because if somebody wants to have sex with somebody else that's a willing participant sure. in that sexual activity, fine.
And they have an extra $130,000 lying around. Yeah.
But I mean, like, seriously, it means nothing.
Yeah.
Like, right? It does, like, that's not a thing yeah. that I care about.
Yeah.
What just fucking blows my mind is like how openly, transparently hypocritical
yeah.
the right. support
that's why
from
we
the,
talk about
yeah.
it. Yeah.
But I'm talking specifically like the support from the right, from the Christians on the right, they just like these policies, right? And it's a, this is such a utilitarianism. And they're not comfortable with just saying, look, he's a terrible fucking person, but he's going to bow to the pressure of reelection. We exert that pressure and he'll put the policies in place that we want to have in place.
Yeah.
So he's a monster. He's not even my monster. I don't even like the guy.
Yeah.
I think he's a shitty person.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think abortion is murder. And he thinks that I want to, you know, he wants my vote.
It's a religious lobby.
You know what I mean?
It's a religious lobby.
So they just
lobby.
Fucking call yeah. it. Instead, they have to like jump through these fucking hoops.
That he's anointed by God and that he's what? The chosen
and
one.
And their back of their throat is fucking bruised with this guy's fucking cock constantly being rammed down that goddamn
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
If they would just be honest, they could get fucked proper.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing to me to listen to somebody say about somebody else who's 70 years old. Well, he's only 70. The die is not yet cast. you know, he's still growing up.
Yeah.
He's still sort of learning from his. I mean, sure, we're all evolving. Well, most of us are evolving yeah. in a lot of different ways. But what a bizarre defense. You know, I mean, just a few years ago is when he said that thing when he was in the bus and when he said to the lady on The Apprentice, hey, I think you'd look great on your knees or whatever. He said. I mean,
right.
it's just that he has a track record far beyond, you know, Stormy Daniels or any of that other
absolutely.
Stuff. You know, ogling people in the, you know, the beauty pageant contestants.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's
yeah.
got a problem. And to watch Graham just set fire to his own credibility in this way with such a lame
But that's the thing
excuse.
Is that it doesn't set fire to his credibility. His followers, Graham's followers, are just like, yeah, absolutely. What kills me is that it doesn't do anything to damage his credibility at all. It doesn't do anything to damage Trump's. It won't do anything to damage Graham's because underneath it all is that utilitarianism where it's like, look, all right, fine. These are the words we're saying in this order.
It's a polite fiction.
Yeah.
It's a polite fiction
right.
that everyone is just nodding along with. They're all like, yeah, no, we really don't believe this, but we're going to say we believe
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The guy could do fucking anything. And as long as he's a Republican, that's all they really care about.
The kind of man that Donald Trump is in terms of character and integrity. The only thing that would make me doubt the Stormy Daniels story, the only thing in the story, the only data point that makes me doubt it, and I don't, I think it probably happened.
Yeah.
Is the fact that 130 grand seems awfully low for a payoff.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, in my mind, that was the only thought. I thought, oh, that seems a little low. It seems like he would have gone a little higher. And that speaks to the kind of guy I think he is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he didn't care. To him, it's all a means to an end. It's a way to protect himself, the truth of the moment. He's sort of a Walter Mitty.
Yeah, but the
guy.
Relatively low dollar amount makes it more believable to me.
Does it?
Yeah, because like, this is a guy who fights. He's got plenty of money, according to him, and he still fights to pay the fucking drywall contractor. You know,
yeah.
So it's not a matter
he
whether
talked her
he's
down.
Still trying. Don't you think he's like? I mean, I'm not being shitty here, but
he's
like,
he's getting his underwear on. He's like, best I could do is 130.
Right,
that's the best I could do.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, you know, this is a woman who still works the strip club circuit. I read an article, you know, about this. And she was interviewed.
I read an article about her at the strip club circuit.
I didn't see her at the Admiral.
I went to the strip club for the articles.
Yeah.
Isn't she cashing in though? I mean, she's starting
to. Yeah, she's cashing in on all this, but like that, I guess that's what he mean. Like, it's not like the money has to be important for her, not important for him, right? It has to be a big amount for her in order for it to be a meaningful sum.
I buy that.
Yeah. So, and I think he would totally try to screw her down in terms of the amount that he wants to pay her.
Yeah.
I, you know, why overpay?
What do you think? You had started to say something and you didn't finish it. Faith in a president. You had started to say that earlier.
Yeah. I think that's a fucked up concept. Like, I think the idea that you should have faith in a person, you know, even if you're a faithful person, faith seems to me like if you're going to grant faith, if you're going to grant this idea of having faith in something, faith in a God, fine, you know, because you can't get there anywhere else. You got to use faith. It's the only mechanism you're going to have. Fine. But faith in people, fuck that noise. Like, people prove to you who they are by their actions and their words. That's it. You don't ever have to have faith in somebody. I never have to have faith in somebody. I can have trust in somebody. So like, see, so we've been friends for 20 years.
Sure.
I trust you implicitly.
Sure.
I have no faith in you. I don't need to have faith in you. Yeah. I have the actions of sure. your 20 years, right? So, but the idea that you would have faith in a president is fucked up. I think that's a really fucked up way to think about people. And it's really a more fucked up way to think about authoritarian
figures. It sounds hopeful. That's what it sounds to me. I have faith in him. Like, he's going to keep doing better and better. He's not going to keep grabbing pussies. He's not going to keep fucking porn stars. I have faith. That's what it sounds to me. The way it's worded is that it's hopeful. It's almost like, I have hope that he's going to get better. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean?
It does. I read it differently. Yeah. I read faith as I have faith. I have trust.
In I see.
Like I trust
see. Yeah.
that he'll do the
right
thing.
That's a different
thing.
Word.
Like our president, we should always be skeptical. We should always be skeptical. Every moment of the day, whoever is in charge of something so important, we shouldn't place our faith in that person. That's an asinine thing to do. We should say, here you go. If you fuck up, I will burn you to the fucking ground.
Yeah.
Right? Because too much relies on this.
Yeah.
Too much relies on this. You get this job. You get the keys to the kingdom. Yeah. All of that is true. If you fuck me over, I will burn your house to the ground. They should be a fucking afraid of the people.
So starting a nuclear war over Twitter with Kim Jong-un, is that a revocable offense? I don't,
He'll burn us to the ground.
Now, how much of this, though, is facilitated by people who have long checked out? They just want an authority figure, some strong figure to come in who talks big, who acts big, even if it's in an untoward way, so that they can get on with all the bullshit stuff that, and we're all guilty and to some degree, right? We have lives to live. We have families to raise. But many people know more about what's on daytime television than they know about what's happening in the world around
them.
How much of this is, you know what? He's a strong guy. He'll go fix it. You know? Oh yeah. I'd love to see him face off against Kim Jong-un. It's time to finally settle it.
There's so many people who say that sort of thing, and they'll say that, you know, that idea of, we're finally standing up to him. And recently I was listening to I think it was New York Times does a podcast called The Daily. And I think I was listening to that. And they were talking about how when North Korea or South Korea was going to have the Olympics before, North Korea blew a plane up, sort of in protest almost. It was a flight that was flying from Saudi Arabia to South Korea, and it blew.
Really?
They fucking blew it up. They had two agents get on the plane from like Japan, fly over. They left a fucking a cassette recorder or something that was actually a bomb on there. And then they flew. They got off the plane in Saudi Arabia, and then the plane with only four other non-South Korean passengers flew back to South Korea and blew the fuck up midair, killed everybody on board. 130 some people died, and they did it. And the world knew it because they caught the people who did it. They caught the two agents. One of them tried to kill themselves. I think one of them successfully killed themselves and the other one they caught. And they knew that North Korea had done it. And the only power that North Korea had was this violence that they could create. But the Reagan administration at the time reached out a hand to sort of see if they could help them. And they released some sanctions on them through this threat of violence and this push of violence. Reagan didn't fucking, go, I got a bigger button than you. Reagan said, well, fuck, we got to dial this back, right? You know, the thing is this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. He doesn't know. Like, the only thing they have is violence. The only way that they can influence the world. They can't influence the world any other way. And so what are you going to, you're going to fucking goad them on? That's ridiculous. That's a silly way to think. But, there are people out there who think that, what we need to do is have a strong hand against North Korea.
I saw somebody on social media the other day and they said, why is there even a North Korea? Like, why are they still around? Right.
Well, where would it go?
In other words, why haven't we just vapor?
Yeah, sure. Why didn't we turn it into glass? Why didn't we turn it into glass yet?
And of course, I'm thinking this
will be an environmental disaster. Yeah.
how do you not see the tremendous number of people? I mean, the mass of human suffering under this regime,
right.
And immediately write them off and say, "Well, it's collateral damage. It's all for the greater good." Yeah. I mean, if you get to that point in your own mind and heart, I really do grieve.
Yeah.
For the species, I mean, I don't want to be that guy. I mean, is violence sometimes inevitable? Yeah. Am I anti-war? Absolutely. Do I worry about Kim Jong-un? Absolutely. Do I think he has monumentally thin skin and he's a power-hungry child with a god complex? Yeah.
Just like our guy.
But I don't think escalation is the answer. I think, you don't provoke a guy who has violence as his only, it's the only tool in his bag.
It's all he's got.
Yeah, but you know, this is the problem with somebody who is used to bargaining always from a position of power and authority. You know, what worried me at the very beginning about Trump is the same thing that worries me now, is that, you know, in business, especially when you are already wealthy and you're already winning and you're already bargaining from the top position, you never have to back down, right? Because it doesn't matter if you don't get the deal, right? Another deal will come along. Diplomacy has nothing. It's not even remotely analogous to business negotiations. The stakes are nowhere near as high. There's not necessarily a clear top position, bottom position, the same way there is in a business negotiation where it's like, you have more of what I want than I have to give. Like there's always a power relationship. The power relationships in international diplomacy are so much more complex, but he still continues to negotiate with everybody as if he's a top position, bottom position business guy.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking stupid way to negotiate with this is not diplomacy. And the thing is, like, if you push somebody like Kim Jong-un too hard,
yeah,
like you said, like if his only tool in his tool belt is violence, you can't even blame him for using the only tool that you leave him.
Sure.
Right. So what the Reagan administration has to do at some point is hand you a tool, right? Yeah. At some point in real negotiations that's genuine, you have to reach out and say, here's a tool you didn't have. I'm going to give you this tool and you can use this tool. This is something I'm going to grant you. So I've given you a carrot. I'm not just beating you with sticks all the time. But he's not going to understand that. That shit's subtle.
Yeah.
He's not going to do it.
Now, is this the point in the cognitive dissonance broadcast when you check your email inbox and you get the, I'm sorry you're skeptical about religion, but you're not skeptical about politics? Yeah. Because that's normally that's normally what I get. I'll get a Trump supporter who's like, I'm so sorry that you're so blinded in every other aspect of your life.
I mean, I guess I'm a lefty. Like, and I came into this being a lefty. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't allude to any of that stuff. But, you know, what's interesting is that it's not just lefties. And, you know, Tom, this next story that we're going to talk about, this guy here, this Michael Steele, he's a former RNC chair, and he is one of the few people who's, I think, you know, pretty much saying, you know, enough is enough when it comes to Trump. I think that there are some people that are in, you know, in the Republican Party that are anti-Trump, but I think that there's going to be a lot more as time goes on that are going to pull away from this and just be like, no, that's just too much. You've gone too far. I thought the shithole comments were going to do that. I certainly think
with every headline, we think this is the one.
You
right?
would think that this would be the one.
I saw an article in the New York Times. It was an opinion piece. Forgive me for not remembering the reporter who had written it, but it's called, I'm paraphrasing, Evangelicals Have Lost Their Gag Reflex. And it was talking about Franklin Graham and Perkins and all these people, right? But I think there are some people like Michael Steele who are, you know, they're going to put up with what they put up with until they simply hit that point of critical mass.
Yeah.
Steele's there, right? He says evangelical Trump supporters should shut the hell up. You have lost any equity you have in your life to tell me how to live mine, how to be a moral person.
Yeah.
You have surrendered the high ground. Don't even speak to me.
And what's great is he's quoting all the worst parts about Trump. And he's reviled by it, right? When he's like, when the you know what grabbing doesn't bother you,
right?
That's a problem. It bothers him.
Yeah.
It bothers him when he says, I can grab him by the pussy. It bothers Steele a lot. And to see it not bother these religious leaders pisses him off. And it should piss him off because they're supposed to be your moral leaders.
Yeah, but should it, you know what amazes me is that, like, he's pissed off. Like, are you surprised? Are you really surprised? Because these guys have been selling, all they're doing is selling. You know, these religious leaders, I don't think any, I mean, like, did you really think up until Trump that, oh, they believed all this stuff?
Well.
I mean, honestly, though, like, I mean, I know we see it differently. Sure. I recognize that we see it differently, but it's also like, it's also so such an obvious business. It's just a business. I mean, and the idea that they, because they support every Republican, right? And they'll always support every Republican. Period. And they'll support whatever the Republican wants to do, even if the thing that the new Republican wants to do is directly in contrast with the other Republican wanted to do. So, you know, like, it's either you're not paying attention or, you know, you're just kind of lying and you're okay with the fact that you're lying. It feels like such obvious bullshit. I get being mad, but you can't be surprised.
The stuff he says when he says, after telling me how to live who to love, what to believe, what not to believe, what to do, what not to do. And now you sit back and the prostitutes don't matter. The grabbing the pussy doesn't matter. He doesn't say pussy. The outright behavior and lies don't matter. Just shut up. Yep. Now you can tell there's a, you know, this is the guy, this Steele, you know, had a fire Nancy Pelosi bus tour. You know what I mean? Like this is a guy who's not, he's not a, you know, somebody who's a fucking lefty like me. He's somebody who reviles Trump just as much, and he's on the right.
I often think there are a lot of guys in power in Congress, right? They enjoy the majority and they're playing a longer game, but they're choking back the bile.
I bet.
And I really do think they're going to come to a point of critical mass. And, you know, what happens then? I don't know. What does it look like? When does it happen? I think we're going to see a revolution. I don't know if it's going to be enough or it's going to happen soon enough, but I think you're going to see a section of Eve. And I think to answer your question, coming from that culture of religious people, even many of the powerful religious people, I think genuinely do believe. They reconcile a lot of crazy shit in their mind and they excuse a lot of stuff. It's like, you know, do I know that Joel Osteen doesn't genuinely believe the Bible? I don't know. He may. Ken Ham, right? I mean, I look at Ken Ham and go, how can you possibly? And people ask me, do you think he's just full of crap and he's filling his pockets. And the truth is, I don't know. But I do think, you know, I haven't given up on all moral people. I've given up on a lot of them.
Yeah.
Though when I've seen the sellout happen in the face of Donald Trump, we've never seen anything like this in the history of the country, in the history of the world ever. We're living in a time we've never seen anything like this. What's the presidency going to look like in 72 months?
Well, you know, what another thing that worries me, and along the similar lines, is like, you know, I read an article that says, you know, like the Republicans are all going to be soiled by Donald Trump. And I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Because the narrative will be that Donald Trump wasn't a real Republican, right? He wasn't a real Republican. The real Republican values are this, this, and this.
He's been doing that the whole time too.
Right. He sells his outsider status. So to some degree, the Republicans that support the pieces of his bullshit that they like, they are insulated from him as a member of their party because he still maintains the outsider status that says I'm in the party, out of the party. And so I don't think that the Republicans are going to be soiled by this bullshit.
Well,
I think they'll do what they've always done, right? Trump will move on in some way, either in 3 years or 8 years, he'll move on and they'll say, was weird anyway. And then somebody else will show up.
Well, the Republicans do a good job of distancing themselves from each other. And if you look at what happened with Roy Moore is a perfect example, right? Trump 2 days before talking about how great Roy Moore is. You should go vote Roy Moore. And then people came out and fucking voted that dude
the fuck out.
Get the fuck out of here. And immediately afterwards you see him on Twitter. Oh, he didn't do what I said and he's not my guy. Trump separates himself from these guys so fast the moment they lose.
Right.
So fast. He doesn't care one bit. He will shed them, you know, as fast as he possibly can. And they're going to do the exact same thing.
I think the moment he
can't win.
Tony Schwartz is the guy who wrote The Art of the Deal for Donald Trump. And Schwartz did an article in The New Yorker right before, I think it was too little too late, but in The New Yorker right before the 2016 election. And he was like, you know, danger, warning. Like, look, I made up a bunch of stuff in The Art of the Deal. A lot of what you're worshiping Donald Trump for is I made up. It's fabricated. I admit it. Right.
Yeah.
And he also was speaking quite a bit about how Trump seemed to be about the truth of the moment. Whatever needs to be true at this microsecond, that's true.
Yeah.
And then in 5 minutes, whatever needs to be true in that microsecond. So for Moore, it might've been, what a great guy. And then he may have literally come to the point where he's like, what a shitty guy. Like the next day. And he may be at a point psychologically where he's just such a sociopath that he can sell himself this nonsense. I mean, who really knows?
I also think that winning matters to him so much that Roy Moore was a good guy until he lost.
Yeah.
And now Roy Moore lost and that makes him a bad guy.
Well, I like this truth of the moment thing. And I will say this. Look at the latest immigration thing that happened when they shut the government down. The day before, Schumer and them, they had a deal. They were going to, like, they were willing to trade the wall for DACA. They said, look, we'll give you the fucking wall. You'll have your stupid fucking wall, which isn't going to prevent anything.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's not going to prevent, you know, the type of immigration that you're worried about. Okay, fine. You have your stupid fucking wall and we get the DACA kids and everybody is like, everybody's happy about that. And he was like, yeah, cool. Great sound. Let's do it. And then the next day he calls back and he's like, I hear you're going to do this other thing. And he's like, wait, we never fucking agreed on any of that stuff. He's like, yeah, that's what I heard. And he hangs up the phone. He will say anything to your face.
Yeah.
And then the moment he walks away from you, he'll say something completely different.
Right.
It's happened so many times with these Democrats. They'll come to the house and they'll be like, okay, we seems we got a deal. They'll walk out and the fucking Schumer on the floor the other day said, it is like trying to make a deal with Jell-O.
he's like Guy Pearce in Memento.
Yeah.
Every 10 minutes, he's like, what the hell?
He's got to open his shirt. He's like, oh, I hate Pelosi. Okay, all right, good.
He's got so much writing space.
Kill Schumer. All right, got it. All right, we're good.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Okay, this is super weird. It's from the Raw story. This is moving away from Trump. California pastor used church to satisfy his fetish for explicit photos, and his wife helped.
Just like that little kid with the hamburger helper.
I helped. Well, to be fair, I wouldn't want pictures of my wife either if it was.
She just had the tripod on this. And I helped.
So this is pretty creepy. So this is a guy who basically used his marriage counseling sessions and pre-marriage counseling sessions to be like, look, all right, you're going to get married.
Yeah.
Probably want to diddle yourself. Yeah. I'd kind of like to watch.
I need
send
to make
me
sure
photos.
Your form is good.
Look, you could sprain a wrist if you get a little too vigorous in there.
He's got a Sharpie and wipe off board. He's like grading. It's like 7.1. 7.1.
He's calling plays. Yeah.
He's got X's and O's. Fucking shit on there. He pulls out his Surface on the side. He's working. Some kind of complex fucking equation on there.
He pulls out his Surface. Like, hold on, it needs to restart.
It's okay. You can get it wet. It's fine. It's waterproof. Yeah. At one point he says that, so he winds up having, he says the woman claims that this guy sent her a photo of himself and his wife with a note saying, just had a great session. So this was after they had had sex, and a photo of them saying, just had a great, is there a least sexy word than session?
What's
for
up,
sex?
Baby? You want to have a session?
What is this, a jazz improvisation?
He is the Anthony Weiner of Christianity, isn't he? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, first of all, I when I saw the photograph, I was like, Ferengi. But after that, I thought to myself, all right, how insidious is this? You have people who are in a position of trust and vulnerability who are told to submit to their spiritual authority. And this guy is essentially getting off by telling them how to get off in these sessions. And the wife is an accomplice. How creepy is that? And when he stepped down from the church a couple of years ago, because he had, I guess it's been going on for a while. Is he being sued or prosecuted? What are the details?
In this, you know, it says that he stepped down. It says the woman said other pastors, did nothing to address her concerns for the conduct between 2014 and 2016. So he has since stepped down in 2016.
Why 2 years of contact? Like, I mean, that's a long premarital marriage session, counseling session.
Right? You
maybe
really,
she couldn't settle on the dress. You never know. These things happen.
Maybe she couldn't settle on the husband.
It's always settling.
You know, it's so despicable. This happens a lot. The sexual nature of, you know, there's somebody in power over you, and they're able to make you do the thing to satisfy them sexually that you don't want to do.
Right.
And this happens so often in churches, that sexual power dynamic that is victimizing to all these people. I mean, dozens of people are victimized.
Do you think those positions of power and authority draw these creeps, or do you think they create these creeps?
Both.
Oh, okay.
I think both. I mean, I think in some instances you will find the people who gravitate to positions where they will be worshiped, and that they'll drift into that. But I also see, you know, that there are people who get into these situations and they look around, and before you know it, they're like, hey, look, you know, all these people are giving me their trust and their attention. And
I should definitely betray that.
I mean, pastoring is a very intimate thing. I mean, you are trusted to help give life advice. You're in that way, and you're in people's homes. You're at the hospital rooms with their relatives. You're praying with them over some very specific family type things. There's a family atmosphere to the pastor, to the pastorate. And so I think, you know, it's, I think it's both. And, you know, he's far from the first person to, you know, always think of Ted Haggard. You know, the more they protest, usually the more you know you're in trouble.
So great. That guy was super great.
How is Jimmy Swaggart still behind the podium? Yeah. I mean, how many hookers, how many mea culpas, how many tears do you have to shed? Yeah. And yet they're still out there doing what they do. And probably the biggest indictment is that there are still people. I mean, we did it. We posted that classic 80s video of the evangelist Robert Tilton from Dallas, Texas, where somebody took all the pauses and put in fart noises.
That is the funniest shit ever. It is so funny. Because he also speaks in tongues too, doesn't he?
Yeah, but that, someone did a riff on that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And he is, now that he has like, you know, 25 people instead of 25,000, but he's still out there pastoring, right, and people are still giving them their hard-earned money. And James Randi once called these types of people the unsinkable rubber ducks. I mean, it doesn't matter how much stuff they do or what they get caught doing, or how, you know, we could indict them with all kind of evidence. And there's a group of people that are just going to always be there funding what they do. And it hurts the heart. How and why does it happen?
What was that guy's name? Popov? Was that his name?
Yeah, Peter Popov.
Peter Popov gets exposed on national television as a fucking fraud, as an absolute fraud. He's doing a psychic game with a, you know, somebody's got a mic in the back and he's got an earpiece and they're reading these cards off back that they know the person, they know who he's near because she can see him. And you're standing in front of the guy who's got a, you know, a bum leg. And then he'll be like, oh, you got a bum leg. And the person's like, oh my God, I got a bum leg. You're absolutely right. And so, but they totally fucking expose him on national television. You know, he's still selling get out of debt free water.
He lives in a $7 million mansion in California. I saw him on TV the other day. He's pitching holy water. Yep. I worked with it when I was in video production a few years ago. I worked with a coworker. Her name is Morgan, and she hates the guy. She's a believer. She's a God believer. She hated Peter Popov. And just on a lark, she actually sent in something on or did something on one of his websites just to see what would happen, because they make these promises. Like, if you give a gift of this much or you send in your prayer request, right, I'm going to send you my vial of prayer water.
Right.
She wanted to find out what would happen. Well, immediately she started to get this volley of letters that appeared handwritten, but they're not.
Right.
They're mass produced, but they are manufactured to appear like they're written in his hand with like scribble marks and stuff scratched out. And it's very, very... And it wasn't long before the request for money, give me $100 and this will happen. Give me $1,000. This will happen. And she requested, please take me off your list. She called. She actually had to return the mail to say this person no longer lives here before the assault on her mailbox from Popoff's office stopped.
Unbelievable.
That's how persistent.
Yeah, but these guys,
they are.
I mean, with these religious leaders, like an assault of your mailbox is the least least worrisome box that's getting assaulted.
It's very true.
I mean, this is like,
Jim Baker is still around.
Yeah.
He was indicted. He went to jail for fraud. He was, you know, the guy's a crook. And here he is, you know, still again. Now
his time in prison to get him authority.
Yeah, it gives him authority. You listen to some of the clips. Now he'll say, you know, when I was in prison, you know, he'll say it out loud. Like it's like a badge of honor to him.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he's like a Crip now, but you know, but one of the things
he's got no regrets tattooed across his chest.
One of the things that he does is it's crazy. He won't sell you a bucket of slop for the apocalypse. What he'll do is you give him a donation and he will then give you a gift of a bucket of slop.
Yeah, what does he call it? Like a love gift or something?
It's like a love gift of a bucket of garbage that he sells you that's freeze-dried garbage for the apocalypse.
My love gift is teaspoon by teaspoon. Yeah. Never a bucket. That's a lot.
You remember Paul and Jan Crouch at TBN, right? I mean, everyone's loading them up with money and they're talking about faith gifts and believe it and name it and claim it and prosperity gospel this and that. I mean, she had an RV... Jan Crouch had an RV for her two dogs. She just had an RV for the dogs. Yeah. And it was, I think they paid either $100,000 or $300,000 just for that.
For the dogs?
For the dogs. And people are not upset by this. They're like, you know, God blessed them.
We play clips in between each of the stories. And Jan Crouch is the one we get the most comments about because she has this thing where she says, all you little ladies out there, you have your little grocery money put aside, give that money to God. And you're just like, and everybody who hears it is just like, Are you fucking kidding? Did she just ask for God? God, did God just ask for grocery money? Gross, like the food money? Crazy.
So that's going to wrap it up for this week. We wound up finishing a whole bunch of tape with Seth on over 2 hours with this stuff. So we're going to cut it into 2 weeks. This is the end of part one. We're going to have him on again next week to talk about Alex Jones. We got some other stories that we cover. We do an interview with him. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're also going to be doing some email next week. We're not doing any email this week. And we're going to be reading some patrons off. So be sure to catch us next week for 401. I want to thank everybody for listening for 400 episodes. We're also going to be playing some on the intro next week. We're also going to be playing some of the congratulatory 400 clips that people were sending us. So if you didn't hear your ears this week, there's a chance you'll hear it next week. We want to thank everybody for sending those in. But we're going to wrap it up and we're going to leave you like we always do with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo quasi alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain deadpan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo, Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your sides. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. Cognitive Dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information, and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.